first want to welcome a new member of parliament from a long constituency period, hoping that you've worked hard as public representatives to the people who voted for us to work for them. And also, our meeting sits today, the beginning of the Women's Month, whereby many women fought for this month, hoping that the programs that are in place, that has been launched since the beginning of the week, will make our voices as women be heard. And in every bottom, in every chamber, hoping that this month will be our month and it will be a very fruitful month. And in unity, we will fight, all of us as women and men who are supporting us will fight poverty. Without any waste of time, I would like maybe to welcome once again people from the department and commissioners from provinces. And I was hoping that maybe the chief commissioner will be here, but I'll hear from you. I'll give over to you and introduce yourself and get into the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Before you, according to my agenda, I skipped one. Apologies. Sorry. I've received apologies from Ms. Ntuli, Mam Ntuli, and Nkosi Holomisa, and Mr. Abram. Those are the three apologies that I've received. And I received one from Honorable Mkunaga, Chief Joiner. Thank you, Hekin.
Chairperson, Honorable Members, thank you. I would also want to start with an apology. The Chief Land Claims Commissioner, yes indeed, was supposed to be here. Himself, together with other two commissioners, Commissioner Mugona and Commissioner Falen from Eastern Cape, are traveling. They are in Canada, and that's a trip that was funded by Canadians, and it was long arranged, and they could not be with us, and I am acting on his behalf, and will be presenting the report. Commissioner Mangwani is also with him from Malanga, so it's only myself, Commissioner Mugono, Commissioner Janssen from Western Cape, Commissioner Sosibo from KZN, and we also have the Chief Director Mashangu from the CLCC's office. We have also we also have the Director of Quality Assurance from the Northern State and Northern Cape Acting Commissioner, and also representing that office. Thank you.
No, thanks for that apology. I think for the matter of protocol and the like, I was supposed as Chairperson to know before this meeting that the Commissioner will be not here. And for the fact that I note that it's for the second time we sit, the Commissioner is engaged in some other program, of which to me as Chairperson, it's becoming to be hard to accept any apology, because even the program of the committee was out 2 months ago. So I don't know, members, is there any member that would like to comment on this one? If there are none, I wish maybe the people who are here on behalf of the ministry will take note this. That is the second time the chief commissioner not attending portfolio committee meetings. So it's a serious concern. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The concern is noted and will be conveyed as such. Today, the purpose of our visit here is basically to present to the Portfolio Committee the annual report of of the Land Claims Commission for the period 1st April 2006, ending on the 31st of March 2007. For that period, we have the report as follows, that of the claims as our mandate is basically the settlement of claims of restitution claims lodged with the commission. We received from 1995, 79,696 claims lodged with the commission, and for the period under review, 74,000 claims were settled, and bringing the number of hectares that was transferred through the restitution process during that period to 1.6 million hectares, and coming to the budget, an amount of 2.3 billion was appropriated from Parliament for this program, and 2.1 billion of that budget was spent basically on the acquisition of land on the restitution projects themselves, and just under 300 million, just under 300 million of that budget was spent on current Chairperson, we are coming to present this report, which of course is factual and accurate up as at the time of its compilation, which was the 31st of March. However, we are saying at this stage we are coming where we have entered the most difficult part of the restitution process, where we are left with 5,279 rural claims that still have to be settled. In fact, that still has to be settled at the time of compilation of this report. And having to settle these rural claims, we are faced with a number of challenges, Chairperson, which challenges include high cost of land, unsurveyed and unregistered land rights, protracted negotiations and claimant disputes taking claims to the land court, to the land claims court, community disputes and issues relating to traditional authorities, and as well as incoherent land use practices and the need for alignment of priorities in land use. That is in communal, as in communal and commercial land use in coherence. Further, Chairperson, we as the Commission during this period have tried to look at ways of addressing these and other challenges that affect the implementation of restitution, and strategies that we have looked at and come up with during this period in addressing these challenges focused in particularly in addressing engaging with stakeholders, including current landowners. We also have increased the capacity in the commission and have developed a staff retention strategy as high staff turnover also proved during this period to be one of the challenges that the Commission had to cope with. We also developed a coherent strategy, or embarked on a process of developing a coherent strategy for a strategic partnership to ensure sustainable settlement and continued agricultural partnership. In this regard, Chairperson, the Belgian government has provided us with financial support for a development of a coherent strategy that would enable and ensure the sustainability of a project born out of the settlement of restitution claims. And we therefore believe that the initiative of the department in coming up with a special purpose vehicle will also dovetail with this process whereby we believe that this SPV will address some of the challenges relating to maintenance and sustenance of the project resulting from the settlement of claims. And of course, it is also our belief that this strategy will also contribute towards the improvement of the quality of life of our people and towards the improvement of the quality of life of beneficiaries of land reform in general. Chairperson, as we were searching or as we were reviewing progress, it became apparent that 40% of restitution beneficiaries during this period and prior are female-headed households, and we in compiling this report decided to dedicate this report to rural women and their civil society structures. The rights and interests of vulnerable groups have also been given priority here for protection in the development of business and land use claims for the resort land. In the execution of its duties, the Commission is enjoined by Section 661B of the Restitution Act to take reasonable steps to ensure that claimants are assisted in the processing and settlement of claims. And in this, we are saying during this period, we have also consciously taken measures to assist claimants in this regard. You will note in this report, we have captured highlights of some of the claims that have been settled during this financial year. And I will run through briefly those highlights in the different provinces. In the Gauteng and Northwest province, the following projects were noted and registered as highlights during this period. The Maliakame community in the Freiburg area, in which claimants were involved, are now involved in livestock farming. The Babubamukhali community around the Hartebees area, this project deals with vegetable production, livestock feeding, and some game farming and granite mining. Reisner Belt community, this is in the Senderstop area, where the project is about crop and stock farming, and 50% chairperson of those of participants of beneficiaries in this project are women, notably. Leofreid community, this is one project which was initially meant identified as an expropriation project, but with persuasion from the Commission and further negotiations, and the claim was settled through a negotiated agreement, and the project there, the taking place in this project the activity there is on maize, sunflower, and cattle farming. To come to Limpopo province, we have the Bapalani Baramuboga community, who are now involved in livestock and game farming. We have the Moledele community, which deals in citrus and exports such citrus to Japan and vegetable production in the same project. We have the Mutukulu community, which deals with beef cattle, which is farming in beef cattle. Mashishimele tribe, dealing with crop range, game reserve, and citrus production. The Modi community, which is involved in ecotourism, with Hamashung Madala community also engaged in ecotourism projects. In the Western Cape, we have the Protea Village and Stone Cottage Museum, where this involves the restoration of urban land and financial compensation for cape. In Kwamahengo, the Fort West community, there is sustainable rural livelihoods such as food, garden, chicken rearing, sewing, candle making, and other women development projects which the community is involved in. Nepal, Kudewok, Faro, Kensington, and Rondebosch, these are urban place which are involved, were settled through financial compensation. In the Northern Cape, Jefferson, we have the Droogtefontein community, which is involved in agriculture and economic and eco-tourism projects. The Sinoval, Falbot Farm community, engaged in mining. The Lebnil community, which is engaged in mining, grazing, and cattle farming. In Mpumalanga province, the Dalmanusha claim for the Ntlapo, Sidu and Sinduli families engaged in livestock and crop farming as well as biofuel crops. The Lulambenzini community engaged in agricultural development projects. The Shambini community engaged in mango and citrus for domestic and export markets. The Bomela community, which is about 1,200 households female-headed, and this involves financial compensation, which was the settlement of this claim. In the Eastern Cape province, we had, during this period, the Magwa community settled, which is engaged in a tea estate project. The Majola community, which is also involved in a tea plantation project. The Indini and Ntamante community, which are involved now in a housing and natural growth project. The Targasat group, which received financial compensation. In KwaZulu-Natal, we had, during this period, the Bekishwe community settled, which is engaged in sugarcane, citrus, and grazing projects. The Somnangeni community, which is also involved in a sugarcane community. The same goes for the Inkumbuleni community, which is also engaged in a sugarcane community. We have the Gumbi community, which was Gumbi community claim that was settled, and projects there are game farming, cattle grazing, tourism, and human settlement. In the Simba community, is involved now in game farming and agricultural projects. The Shusuwe community is also involved in game farming, which includes the internationally renowned Shusuwe Umfolozi Park. Ladies and members, as we continue in the review of our performances during this period, we noted that the life cycle of the project of settlement of this claim had a number of steps that called on us to review, and the decision that we came to was the need to shorten the project life cycle and so as to find accelerated pace in the settlement, and the business process as amended, shortened business process as amended, is mapped out on page 8 of the annual report, the booklet that has been registered, that has been distributed. We have learned that some of the steps that we took actually took much longer than anticipated. Steps that we are involved in the settlement take much longer than anticipated. An example of such would simply be the devaluation of properties, where more than one evaluation would be necessitated by disagreement on price recommended by one evaluation to the extent that the commission in some cases ends up with having to commission more than one evaluation to work out of just and equitable to work out the just and equitable compensation. The commission ensures that we take care of or we include and make and consider those factors mentioned in section 25 of the constitution as well as the guidelines that are now given and encapsulated in the new expropriation bill. And it is our hope, Chairperson, that the new expropriation bill, as we have been engaged with the Department of Public Works in its amendment, would also assist in the actual implementation of the expropriation read together with Section 42E of the Restitution Act. The Commission is however challenged to obtain relevant documents, as we have alluded to previously in our previous submission, finding, locating, and obtaining the required documents to verify payments has also proved to be one of the challenges by the Commission in dealing with payments. Family disputes remain a challenge where these disputes arise from different complex scenarios from situations such as one family or one household with different core families. We have cited an example here of a family where you have one father and more than one mother or more than one wife, and you have descendants coming from those different core families and having to balance the interests, identifying the actual direct descendants of that family which was dispossessed. The Commission officials to be diligent, Chairperson, in eliminating fraudulent claimants who may simply want to infiltrate the system. We have recently gotten reports about some of the claims that were fielded through to the Commission, and they are, and have been found to be fraudulent. The Commission still has to deal with those, and as indicated, exercise due caution to avoid such instances. It takes time, Chairperson, to finalize list of rightful claimants, especially in communities. Some of the queries that we have received, even from auditors, related to issues relating to claimant verification, and we are saying to be on top of it. The Commission needs the required skills and the necessary capacity to explain the different options of redress in restitution. We have also come to realize that the options that are seen as suitable and relevant by one party are not necessarily suitable and relevant for the other party involved in negotiations. And for us to come to an agreement, this takes quite a while, Chairperson. One of the other challenges that we have had to deal with during this period was also ensuring sustainability of the projects that arise out of the settlement of restitution. And we have, in an attempt to come up with a strategy, have used the Belgium government assistance to appoint a consortium that assisted the Commission and the Department in coming up with a strategy which is going to be dealing specifically with these challenges, looking at the various aspects that are involved in ensuring a comprehensive and coherent post settlement strategy. We have developed this strategy to ensure and assess a comprehensive and sustainable support to all land reform beneficiaries so that the aims of restorative justice and the redistributive equity are realized and may never be reversed. Chapter 2, the strategy is also aimed at empowering beneficiaries to ensure that their quality of life is improved. The same strategy has got a number of elements that we want to share with the community, and these elements include secure property rights, access to resources such as water, agricultural inputs, finance, and information in terms of research, technical assistance, improved public and private utilities such as roads, sanitation, and electricity, entrepreneurship and business development attributes, facilitation for macro policies such as fiscal prices, trade, and investment policies. The strategy also endeavors to deal with matters relating to full and equitable integration of the vulnerable groups. Chairperson, part of the pillars of this strategy for settlement, for support in support to those projects, the following have been identified as pillars of such strategy, and we are saying this strategy would then form an integral part of the special purpose vehicle which I earlier indicated that the department has come up with a process of establishing. These pillars include livelihood, enterprise and technical support, as well as development grants, loans, enterprise development and extension services. The pillars also include integrated natural resource management and sustainable settlement, capacity and institutional development, which deals with protection of land rights, empowerment of community property institutions, and customized training, and functional and special integration. This dealing with the very area-based planning approach that we are now talking about, with a view for integration of land reform projects, and in particular here the restitution projects, with the provincial growth and development strategies, the IDPs, as well as the local economic development. Furthermore, Chairperson, we are saying this settlement support strategy aims to provide support to the beneficiaries in the utilization of the development grants that are made available by the department as we settle the claims. This has become apparent that it is a necessity, it is essential that such support is provided to ensure that claimants are in a position, or beneficiaries are in a position, to utilize effectively and manage the funds, the grants that they receive as such. And this strategy also is hope will contribute to the alleviation of poverty as one of the major objectives of government, and in the creation also of job opportunities, and in the contribution to the economic growth of the country in general. And a detailed account of this strategy can be read in those pages 55 to 57 of the annual report as distributed. The following slides, Chairperson, just a diagrammatic representation of the elements and ends of this strategy as I've indicated them, how they integrate and interface with each other at different levels. And the following four slides are just an indication also of an assessment of where we are in terms of ensuring an integrated developmental approach in land reform, where we are and where we would want to be. The first slide there deals with spatial and spatial and functional integration, where we are beginning to say through this strategy we want to inculcate the notion that land reform is for us all. It is everyone's business and not only the Department of Land Affairs or the Commission per se. The social, institutional and capacity building slide there deals with areas that need to be given focus, taking us from the very phase of locating communal property institutions, support function in area-based support up to a point where we will see customized area-based learning and capacity development. With regards to the fifth and the sixth slide, here we are through this strategy addressing the integrated natural resource management as well as sustainable human settlement, where we are saying here the goal eventually is to see support for co-management agreements on conservation land and support for the sustainable settlement planning and service delivery. The strategy further gives us a roadmap with regard to livelihoods, enterprise and technical support, where we are saying we are looking at a scenario where there would be a paradigm shift recognizing current livelihoods, activities and enterprises on land at different scales, and this eventually landing us at a position where we are able to leverage finance and we are in a position to have learning circles to project support. Stepping off the settlement implementation support and coming back to the land same issues again specifically, we during this period have recorded a number of cases that went to court, and mainly during this period we had one of the major cases that were referred to court, which dealt with Bobela community and other similar cases. And at the time of compiling this report, the case had been referred to court, and subsequently a court decision and judgment had been made. But as we were compiling this report on the 31st of March, the case has only been referred to court. We have other cases that have been referred to court for various reasons. We have an account of such cases on page 49 of the annual report for more details on that one. And perhaps just to indicate that there has been a court judgment which we found as groundbreaking. The constitutional judgment on Goben, which now is enjoining us to look at a number of cases that are similar to that one dealing with issues, cases of labor tenancy. Coming to how we use our budget, how we use our funds, the commission was allocated a total budget of 2.3 billion. 2 billion of such budget was used, as I indicated earlier, was used specifically for for capital transfer, for the acquisition of land, which means it was used for the core business of the commission, which is land purchase and grants relating to land claimants. And only 300, or just below 300 million of that budget was used for current budget and for support functions. Chapter and during this period, we experienced also changes and progress with regards to the functioning and the operation of the commission. One such progress was the delegation of powers by the minister to the commission, whereby the minister approved a delegation of 50 million to the regional land lease commissioners and 100 million to the chief land lease commissioner. With this responsibility, the commission had to put in place to ensure quality control and risk management in dealing, in managing and implementing these delegations. And to that extent, the director quality assurance in the different offices had to be appointed, and at that time the process had gone up to recruitment of such directors, and it was at its final stage. Subsequent to that chairperson, at this stage, progress has been made. Some of the offices, yes, do have such appointments already finalized. Risk registers and fraud prevention plan had been completed and at the time ready for implementation. The final system for risk management is in the process of implementation. It was already initiated at the stage at the time of compiling this report. The ID badge system for claimant verification has been introduced, and offices are receiving training. Actually, as we are talking now, offices are implementing, making use of this system to verify identification that claimants present to the community. In respect of claims, coming to the number of claims, or the picture with regard to the settlement of claims, during this period, the commission settled maximum 2,772 claims and 706 of those were rural claims, and 2,066 of the claims settled during this period are urban claims. And this was done at the tune of 4.6 billion. And that was just for the period under review ending March, 31st March 2007. Cumulatively, from the 79,696, that total of claims lodged with the commission, at the time of this review, the commission had registered a total of 74,417 claims that had been settled. The situation might be different as we are talking now, but at the time of compilation of this report, that was the figure registered totally. And this was done at the cost of 10 billion. Reports, chairperson, from the different regions are captured in those pages as indicated in the report, in the annual report. I will not go through them in detail, as I've touched on the highlights of the project in those processes, in those provinces, just to direct you to the pages where you will find the specific reports, 16 to 21 in Gauteng and Northwest, 22 to 26 in Limpopo, 27 to 29 will be Western Cape reports, 30 to 32 would be pages dealing with the Eastern Cape report, pages 33 to 37, captures the Free State and Northern Cape report, and 38 to 41 chapters in the Mpumalanga report, and pages 42 to 46 deals with the detailed report for KwaZulu-Natal. With regards to claims that remained outstanding at the time of compilation of this report, as the review at that time, the commission nationally was standing at a total of 5,279 claims still to be settled, with Western Cape dealing with 600, left with 600 claims, Limpopo 700, Mpumalanga 971, KwaZulu-Natal 1,822 being the highest, Northwest 247 claims outstanding, Gauteng only 10 claims remaining, Northern Cape 229, Free State 100, and the Eastern Cape remaining with 600 claims still to be settled, and this was at 31st March 2007. To deal with these cases, the following measures or strategies have been developed on all outstanding claims. Especially of note is the fact that most of these outstanding claims are rural claims and for restoration of land. Land use differs, and we are busy developing settlement models to fast-track these settlements, which is restoration and restoration of rural land, of rural claims. Land prices are determined by the market forces, and we are saying the commission per se had very little control over the over these trends and market forces. However, National Valuation Review Panel, to assist to unblock challenges in terms of valuation and crisis and valuation of claimants, has been put together. We are also looking at fast-tracking the settlement by acquiring and transferring land to the state where we find land has been, a claim has been, or rather an agreement has been reached with the land owner, and the community itself or the claimant is not at that time ready to take ownership of the land, and where in such cases we go ahead to finalize, to settle with the claim, acquire the land and transfer it in the name of the state with a view to transferring it subsequently to claimants once they are ready to take such ownership or to take transfer. Further on strategies, the settlement of rural claims has also unfolded in phases, and we continue to do so just to deal with those cases that we feel are ready, or those phases, those areas of particular claims that there is agreement, they are easy to settle, and only come back later to those challenging aspects of settling those particular claims. The high political intervention regarding challenges with traditional leaders, chairperson here, we are saying in areas where we have had to deal with these challenges in this regard, we have solicited and obtained political intervention, which continues to assist us in unblocking some of these challenges or addressing some of the challenges in this regard. The appointment of an agency to provide mediation, chairperson dealing with the inherent conflicts and disputes in within communities and among families. We have appointed here an agency to do so. It's one such panel that is going to be assisting us in resolving or in addressing these challenges so as to take the burden and load from our core capacity, which will be focusing specifically now on the actual typical settlement of claims. The non-availability of state lands here remains a challenge and will be addressed at a strategic level with the various components of the department, and this becomes necessary, we are saying, Chairperson, where we have to look at alternative lands in cases where restoration is not necessarily feasible, or where such state land itself is the property under claim. Chairperson, we have also indicated in the previously that we had a capacity, or rather one of the challenges that came over, and our capacity, our ability to deal with the load and the pressure as it was given the time frame that we had to settle with. In this regard, Chairperson, the Commission had capacity in terms of human resources had been increased to 1,125 from an original number of 804, which means we got additional new posts totaling to 321, and bringing it up to the total of 1,125. And at the time of this review, we remained with 474 vacancies at the rate of 42%. But as you're saying, we are now continuing to staff and to fill the vacancies, and certainly the situation might be different in different offices as we are speaking now. In conclusion, we are saying it is our view that we have recorded good progress in the settlement of claims themselves, in oiling the restitution machine itself, and in capacitating the commission per se, chairperson. We, however, acknowledge the fact that we have met with challenges, but we have done our best to come up with strategies to deal with those challenges. Some of them are challenges that still remain complex and affect our ability to finalize on some of these things that we have referred to as complex. We have also gone on to learn from other countries through our international experience and comparative studies, as I indicated in the beginning, in my opening chairperson, that we even now have a team of our colleagues who have gone to Canada for best practice to go and learn and share how some of the countries are dealing with these challenges that we are particularly facing, and with special reference to post-settlement. The development opportunities that have arose from the settlement of claims cannot go without notice. The communities have continued to benefit even though we still have challenges, and development opportunities, of course, not only for the claimants, but also for implementers of land reform of restitution as they continue to acquire more knowledge and experience in this field. Finally, Chairperson, we would want to register our appreciation of the support that we have received and continue to receive from both the Portfolio Committee, the Select Committee, and other political structures and administrative as well at various levels that we have called upon to intervene and assist us in our implementation and execution of our mandate. Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner. Thanks for the presentation. I also appreciate the working relationship we're having with you as social commissioners, and I've learned that this is the report that was prepared for the year, financial year ending for 2007, because there are some other claims that were circled, especially in my constituency, perhaps in the region during the constituency period, who are not recorded in this report. So I also want to appreciate that some of those claims that are circled, you are being invited and are part of those processes, and we know them. Without any waste of time, honorable members, I would like, maybe I've recognized honorable Dr. Gray, wants to kick in with the question.
Chair, thank you for the presentation. I think that we are getting a clear idea of how things are progressing. Just a number of questions for further clarity, please. And I'll be short. Mentions is made about the different challenges in processing the remaining restitution claims. What would you say is the most challenging problem? Is it the price of land, or is it the question of getting clarity in terms of the claimants to take over the new land? I would say that you've got two different types of negotiation, one with the landowner and the other with the claimants to get the things in. Is that the bottleneck where it is? Then also in your presentation, you show here a number of separate claims in the past year in the different provinces. Could it be possible to get a list of the towns where these different claims are? And to what extent does the department do follow-up, or the commission do follow-up, as to the success and sustainability of these claims? Because there is a question around that. Just regarding the roadmaps, you say in your presentation, this is where we are now, and along this road you flag a number of ISO say milestones. Are they still to be achieved, or are some of them already in place? And then the last question. Where claimants are already not ready to take over land, and the commission then buys the land and puts it into state ownership, who then looks after that property and keep it in place? Are there special agreements? How is that being done? And the thing that I find very disturbing, and I think we all appreciate your ability to try and settle the claims within the time. But if I look at the human resources table at the bottom, where your total, grand total of human resources is 1,125, of which 804 are old, or so I say, experienced people, and 321 new. In other words, a third of the people working there do not really have expert experience within the department, and usually it takes some time for anybody in a new position to really achieve competence to really settle. And then the vacancy rate of 42%. To what extent is the ability to achieve the goal of complying with the date of next year to complete, does this inhibit you, and do you think that you will really achieve? With this figures, I really do not think that you will be able to comply to settle all the outstanding claims by the date that you set yourself. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Member Dr. Gray. I recognize Honourable Nguna, and you can.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Firstly, let me start by thanking the presentation that has been laid before us, and thank the delegation for the exciting work that they are doing. Though we may not be able to satisfy everybody, it's a tough journey that we are undertaking. My first question
is in relation to the rural claim. One of the challenges, Chairperson, in the claims that are rural related is the fact that there is no demarcation. There is no map, you know, which clearly stipulates that this area starts here and there, and that there are no specifications and all that. One would like to know as to how far has this gone. Do you now have maps in those areas where maps did not exist previously? Are you now able to process some of these claims? And then secondly, as I started earlier on, I am looking at the number of claimants that are still outstanding and also looking at our target date next year, March, if I'm not mistaken. Well, maybe if one has to look at the outstanding claims in region, housing region, maybe the 10 outstanding might be settled, you know, with all what you have mentioned. But the other claims, 700 to 500 down like that, I do not see us being in a position to implement them. Do we have any, you know, outstanding mechanisms to can say by next year March, considering, of course, the tedious journey that we are undertaking? Do we have any outstanding mechanisms to can say by next year March, we shall have settled this or half of this? I'm just a bit worried. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Lucas.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I should just mention the first page of the presentation. It shows a minister who is hands-on, and I think that's encouraging. And you see her participating. However, there are serious problems. One of the market forces which determine, which are out of the control of the Commission, which is a fact. And I think these are the things that hamper the progress, because things just become more and more out of reach. And that is a serious problem. And if you look back, it is all over the country you'll find the same sort of situation. The other thing I must also say, the 42% of the vacancies is not a good reflection. And I think something should be done if we're really serious and we need to get to completion of this situation. International experience. That is a serious one, because I think wherever you go, whether it's Brazil, Chile, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, the pattern is the same. This poor, disadvantaged people have suffered. All over. You just go and find it the same. And I don't think the solution that we can adopt, we can learn much from those places. We were recently in Brazil and in Chile. In Chile, they just don't even think about it. They say, oh, that's forgotten. Let's go forward now. People must come in and purchase. It's market related. If you want it, anyone can come in and purchase over there. So I'm not sure how much we can learn from this, because we have a really serious problem here. Our people were disadvantaged. They were pushed out of their good areas, and now they have to come back, and they were deprived of skills because of the educational system of this country. So we have serious issues to look at. And I don't know whether these other places are going to help us much. And then the population, our numbers of the disadvantaged are so great compared with the Aborigines or the Maoris or the First Nation people in Canada. We are serious. And I remember one trip we got to Canada. They were handing over the land to the First Nation. But just before they were handing over, they found diamonds. And the government reversed this whole policy. Because then I thought they would have, the First Nation are all going to get rich all of a sudden. So the whole situation changed. So it is important that we look at home and see what we can do. And we are a young democracy, and we're 13 years, and we have a mammoth task. Even now, we still feel deprived. In this country where we boast of our democracy, we still don't feel as though we are where we should really be. And we need to encourage it, and I think we as members of parliament will help as much as we can to make progress so the people down there can. The other thing is this, right? We take the land, we give it to the people. Do we supply the tools? Because this is the serious thing. You can have many hectares of property, but if you can't utilize it, I bet you, in a few years' time, it's going to go back to where it was. And that is the unfortunate thing. So we need to follow up with good skills and training. And I think, finally, may I just ask about, I don't see in KwaZulu-Natal, I see it quite quiet in Mangethe. I hope that situation has been solved completely, because it is. How does it work now? Again and again. I say that was a serious issue, and it was, I hope it has been settled, and I'm so glad to see someone from KwaZulu over here who may be able to explain. I say, and then finally, the documentation, because there are many marriages where just common law marriages, and there were children. And the Mangethe issue is one example that will show. John Dunn had 54 women. And he had this vast majority. And I don't know how he claimed and said who's the descendant and who's not the descendant. So it is a serious problem. It's a serious, serious problem. And we've got to look at this with South African eyes. Thank you.
Thanks,
Honorable Lucas.
Welcome
back.
I think I must also echo the appreciation from the Commissioner for the presentation they have delivered today. And more so that the Chief Commissioner is not around. Chairperson, my first question would be, we hear that there are sums of money like 30,000 to each individual in the parliament. What is this for? 30,000 compensation. You say it's compensation. What are you compensating these people for? And how did you arrive at this 30,000? And what attached to that question, did you perhaps manage to establish that some of those people were compensated when they left those areas? On page 3 of your presentation, you are saying you are left with 5,279 rural claims. To start with, I'm not sure if we are on the same wavelength regarding the definition of rural. When we talk about rural, what do we really say? But the main question would be, do you think you are going to meet the deadline? If you say there are so many challenges in this area where you are now, will you be able to meet the deadline? Well, perhaps some of the questions might be repeated and will make your work easy. Then on page 14, you talk of MAPWA, TSA, and Majola community and what have you. Are you able to indicate if those people are still producing tea in those areas? And if they are still producing tea, what monitoring strategies have you left behind to make sure that those projects will be sustainable? On page 23, you made mention of the grant being released in phases. What are we really saying when we say the grants are released in phases? What are we really saying? The last one on page 37. one of the challenges was with the traditional leader. Well, I would have thought that perhaps the traditional leaders would be working with you, and what could have been happening? What could have been the challenge regarding the traditional leaders? Is it fear of losing power or of losing control over their people? What could it be? Thank you very much, Shepherd.
Thanks, Honorable Peter. Honorable Jali.
Yes, thank you, President. I was just speaking to Tungwazazana or something else, but anyway. Chair, I just want to maybe to join those who are welcoming the delegation from the Commission. And of course, my first comment would be, I really don't know to what extent the delegation is going to answer these questions in the absence of the commissioner, who is definitely responsible for some of these issues. And second, I hope that the areas which will be asking questions, which those commissioners are not here, they'll be able to answer those questions. My first will be in relation to the page 37 of their presentation, which they talk about the bullet point number 4, non-availability of state land, a challenge and will be addressed at a strategic level. Firstly, what are the strategic levels referred to here? We're talking about less than 8 months to go. You are still taking us, it will be addressed at the strategic level. Which means it is not necessary yet. Then the question, why? Why? Secondly, if we talk about the state land, I've got an article here in terms of the Mpumalanga. It is a state land owned by public wealth. This committee claimed, they called the Matalascom claimant. I need a full detailed explanation of this. This committee has been claiming this for the past 5 years. The state land, public wealth, is only 80 hectares, 8-4. For the past 5 years, they've been sent dealer to post. For example, the committee representative is saying here, if I may read for you, the Matalascom laid claim to a piece of land in White River called JU64, which was owned by the Public Works Department. Land includes the potential gaming board of offices and houses that are the Public Works Department rents to civil servants. The commissioner there offered them money. They say they don't money, they want their land back. They are further saying here that they even went to the commissioner himself, who referred them back to the commissioner of Mpumalanga. They are being sent to federal post. They are saying in court, Tony Gwanya has also said, Gwanya referred us back to Mpumalanga, I'm telling you that these guys are stubborn, unquote. You know, if this community can claim this, and you are saying in your presentation, none of the state land a challenge, then this state land here available. For the past 5 years, this community has not been giving this land back, and instead of being offered money. Just explain us why. Let me leave that one and come back to the other issue in terms of your presentation. The appointment agency to provide mediation services. I suppose that refers to the problem that you have been telling us for the past 4 or 5 years of the dispute within the community. I want them to know, is this agency in place? If it's not in place, why? Because you've been telling us this thing for the past 5 years. Are you intending to finish this work? Or you want to do as the commissioners do when they want extension indefinitely? I don't want to make an example about this traditional commissioner from Tapo, which has not even finalized his job. They're always asking for extension after extension. Maybe that's not my jurisdiction to ask that question. The other issue that I want to check from yourself, the question of the financial performance. You know, financial performance, it has been reported that there's an amount of 1 billion rand savings on 2006-2007 financial year, which was surrendered to the National Treasury for your failure to spend this money. We need explanation why. If in one of your presentations you are talking about the post-settlement, which I still have to refer to, and you are telling us that 1 billion rand has been referred to the Treasury, has not been spent, and you're still complaining about the post-settlement problem, I don't understand why. If I may also refer to that question of the post-settlement, in one of your presentations in terms of financial, I mean of the annual statement of course, developed a post-settlement planning process. I thought this has been developed already. I thought this is in place. Because this terminology I've been hearing for the past 4 or 5 years, exactly the same terminology, exactly the same challenge. I don't know why it is going to not be a challenge. For example, if you look at your annual report, page 17, page 28, and page 31, all provinces are talking about the same thing. Post-settlement planning process. Post-settlement planning process. Post-settlement planning process. It's still the planning process. Why? We would need great to advise. I was just looking, page in terms of annual report, in terms of the Eastern Cape, I don't find there was a team that came before us. I think it was in 2003, in the Matatiel area. I can't remember the name of that. Maybe the young men there will remember. They are his brothers who came before us some time ago. They raised an issue of there is a tiny land on the river there which is going up to the Lesotho direction from Matatiel, from Cedarville, Matatiel and going up. And that claim was promised by the commissioner then, and also together with the land affairs, that matter is receiving attention then. And when I'm looking at these reports, I don't find anything talking about that particular claim at all. We need an explanation. A young man, you have to remind me what the name of that.
Ongeluk Nek, and they're not related to me.
Nek. In fact, we want to know exactly what is going on in that particular thing. But they came before us, and we promised them, we met with the land affairs, we met with the commission there. It's not 2003 if I'm correct. It's about 4 years later. We don't hear anything about that. We need a full detailed explanation about that. We were once told that the Mushasha, King Mushasha or something, was also claiming that, but we want to know exactly in terms of that one. That is Eastern Cape one. But in terms of KZN, I don't know what I share, because this issue, when we received the Ngonyama Trust Board, we asked some of these questions. And the Ngonyama Trust Board refuted certain issues that are raised by the commissioner. And the Ngonyama Trust Board requested that the commissioners should meet with them if they're having a problem about King's validity. These are issues need to be addressed, because if the claims that or allegations that are coming up before us are true, it is something that needs to be addressed urgently. And if it needs to be, Chairperson, with your permission, we definitely as a committee we need to visit these areas, both in Mpumalanga and KZN. And as a committee we need to meet with both the Ngonyama Trust Board and the King's Olympian is a garage. There is absolutely no way we can accept that. Because the land belongs to whoever, not to the individuals, which will say as such. I'm proposing that I think we need to visit, because I think some of the committees are doing some also oversight in terms of some of the issues. We need to visit this area. So we see ourselves, and even if we have to visit that, we must take the commissioners with us. So that whatever they are saying to us, we must say there in front of those people, so that we are able to take it up in the process now. If it needs be, we'll have come back to Parliament and make a resolution to Parliament, then come to Parliament resolution. We can't wait indefinitely for that issue. The President, if you bear with me. The other issue that I just want to check in terms of the presentation is in relation to the issues raised by Comrade Cry on their human resources. On their human resources, they referred to...
Oh, brother.
You're protected.
I thought it's my Comrade Cry. Oh, brother Cry.
But the meaning of the word Comrade
is in fact, if you go to Xbox Dictionary, it's going to tell you what Comrade means. But let's leave that. The other issue that I want to check, because of the lack of capacity and accountability on the part of the community property association. You know, this issue, I think we once raised when we visited Limpopo some time ago, I think about 4 or 5 years ago. The feasibility and the productivity of these CPAs. I remember when we visited one project in Limpopo, I think it was 2002, if I'm correct, or 2003. Where there was also the same complaint that the committee members are not reporting back to the community. We then said there that if that is the case, they need to review these structures, whether they're productive, and make sure that the beneficiaries are benefiting out of these processes. I see this in the same fund of the annual report, this comes back again. What are we doing about that? Because they need to propose that. If we need to have to get rid of these structures, let's get rid of these structures. We can't have structures that are not functioning indefinitely. The other issue, Chair, which I just want them to report to us, in terms of human resources. I thought, Brother Cry, the 807 referred here, I thought it doesn't refer to, they will clarify, I thought it doesn't refer to say, these are the old people that have been working. I thought it refers to the old vacancies that they reported before. Now they are reporting on the progress of the human resources vacancy. I'm sure that's why they have this with 42%, even that 42%. Because if you look at the annual report, you'll find that most of these provinces are talking about the capacity, turnover, and they are not moving at all. At all. I don't want you to come before us again to tell us that you have been unable to finalize this restitution because of the capacity, because of the non-staff and other things. It's up to no way. There's a lot of unemployment that needs. We even recommended one time that you can even take people in terms of the interns. Those interns that can be able to help you. Those interns, at the end of that same term, they may even be recruited, because they may progress to an extent that they may even perform more than you guys are sitting here, you know. These are the innovations that we're supposed to do. We're not hearing anything about that. The other issue, Chair, if you allow me, the question of the expropriation. You know, I want the commissioner to tell us, if are there any processes that have been undertaken so far as the expropriation is concerned? How many farms that have been expropriated, if any? And if not, how many that are in pipeline to be expropriated? Because we don't want to hear this again, because we have the legislation that we have amended here. We hear the presenter talking about public works and themselves. You know, the problem with this integration of these resources, of these legislation, you may find you have got a legislation government administered by another department. You have got a legislation administered by another department. There is no linkages in terms of these departments at the end of the day. I want to know in terms of the process, how far that process is. And also in terms of the alternative redress, for example, you may have land which...
Can you conclude?
Oh, yeah, I'm just about to conclude now. You may have sometimes land which is not given to the people, then you need to have another space of land to be given. I'm sure that refers to your section 6, subsection 2B of the Restitution Act. I want you to tell us, how far have you gone in that process? So that we know exactly whether these things are working or not. Thanks, the person. I may end there. Thank you. I'll come back if I have some opportunity for that. I think I still have some lists that I have to ask. Thank you.
My apology, Honorable Nell, I didn't recognize you before. My list ended this way, and then I came back. You may now come in.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to follow up on Fred Ali, on the Fred. I'm
I'll tell you what that means in a little while. On the appropriated funds for the department, I fully agree with him that that there was 3.3 billion appropriated for this commission, of which 1 billion was taken away because they couldn't spend it in the adjustment budget. So to say that you've spent 100% of your funds and let the minister say that, it's not the whole truth. Furthermore, Chair, there is concerns that are widely held about the sustainability of restitution projects, and you've mentioned that also. But what you said about how to go about to get to that concerns is that you've construct a consortium that should talk to this new special purpose vehicle. But my problem is that special purpose vehicle isn't instated as yet. And this problem is on the ground. Now, is this consortium going to alleviate some of these problems, or look into some of these problems of sustainability? Or are you going to wait for the special purpose vehicle before somebody is going to look into the sustainable crisis? Then something on the on state land, I'm not sure that I understand the whole business of state land for restitution. How many state land is there that can be brought into the restitution process? And what is exactly the problem with not doing it? And then I just want to ask the last question, and that is, how many of the 5,297 outstanding claims have been settled this far in this financial year, the last 4 months? If you can give us just a figure, if it is not very real, but just a guess on how many of that parties in the first 4 months of this financial year have been settled. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Nurse. Mandita, I think you have the last one. Today, Chairperson, on page 18, there's this breakdown of settlements of our spending. My colleagues have already asked the question, is it really possible to reach the target set out by the president? And I also want to know, because that's the query to me, but as a human rights resources 19, we are told that we have 42 vacant posts. I just want to know, are the commissioners not part of that? Why I'm saying this is because I see the commissioners are not enough for the provinces. And yet, I see that to reach that target, we should really have enough manpower. If we don't have manpower, for them to share the provinces, I think it's also going to make it more difficult. For instance, Northern Cape and Free State is shared by one, and it is 329 land claims that are still outstanding. but it's only 1% that is actually running it. But, and so on and so on. And also the chief claims commission is also acting for Free State and Northern Cape. They don't even have a commissioner at the moment, but they say they have 42 vacant. Can they explain whether the commissioners are not part of it? 42%. Okay. So can they really explain why haven't they got enough manpower, which would actually make it easier if everyone was supposed to be facing his or her own problem, so that they can try and target this outstanding one. Yeah, I think I would really pause there, because I think other questions have been asked. But I also feel that these projects that they say they are existing in our different provinces, I echo frontline, that we could, with Brother Valley, that we could go and visit and see those people, particularly the ones that they say they are existing in. Maybe what we could do is to split ourselves, that we share. It seems each and every province they have got some developments that some of us haven't seen. It would be nice if the commissioners are coming up with something. I think.
Thanks, ma'am. I also share the same sentiment with brothers and friends, all of our members. Also, maybe before we intend to go to oversight to those provinces, we need a breakdown. I expected that in the very same presentation, breakdown by town to town, so that we could understand in our different constituency whereabouts as members of parliament, because we are doing monitoring and oversight, so that we could know. I was asking maybe after this meeting, go back to your offices and do us that breakdown, so that we could be able to know which towns are we going to go to visit and check those projects. If there are no any questions, maybe I'll give over to you, commissioners, to respond to the questions. I know there are many, and try your best.
Honorable members, chairperson, thank you. The questions are indeed many and in tall order. I hope we will be able to respond to all of them, and we'll just beg for your indulgence where we are not able to deal with area and project specific details. Honorable Sally, as you have rightly indicated, We might find it a bit challenging at this point to give you a direct response on those particular projects to your satisfaction. But where we are lacking, we will endeavor to, in writing, respond to those questions after engaging with the relevant offices. And maybe also to welcome the proposal or the decision of the committee to visit the projects. We would appreciate that as well, because you will on the ground relate with the challenges or share the successes that actually we are attempting to reflect through our report.
Let me interject you. Since we are preparing for a People's Parliament, I think Eastern Cape one will be the first visit, our first visit during our People's Parliament days.
That is noted, and we will prioritize Eastern Cape. And in fact, also to go further, there's a breakdown on the remaining 5,000 has actually been done according to towns, ministerial districts, and so forth. We come from a recent engagement with the minister as a commission, where we were actually earnestly and honestly reviewing the figures in terms of what is outstanding, where they are, and looking at the actual strategies that we will be employing in addressing those outstanding claims, and also to be honest about the nature of complexities that we have gone about to say are actually inherent in those particular claims. But to come to other questions, I am going to request the assistance of my colleagues in responding to a number of questions that have been raised. Yes, on the questions of cities, also on the development. That information will be availed to the committee soonest as we come out of this presentation. The question on the transfer of state land. Here we have alluded to a situation where state land is transferred. I mean, where land is transferred to the state when the communities or the claimants themselves are not ready to take ownership. As that happens, the land for legally and for all intents and purposes at that time becomes the responsibility of government, of the department for caretaking. And during that process, caretakership arrangements are made between the commission, the claimants themselves, but with the responsibility officially still remaining with the state land management component of the department, and various options are explored, are considered at that phase. In some instances, you find the claimants themselves are appointed for caretakership, or you get other people, or even the outgoing farmers themselves being considered and appointed for such caretakership, or jointly between the two, the outgoing landowners and the claimants, taking that caretakership responsibilities, of course, under the supervision of mainly the Department of Land Affairs in the person of, or rather in the component of state land management. And those caretakership agreements are formal agreements where the inventories are taken, and the responsibilities in terms of what the roles of those caretakers would be, and the time frames and so forth, and should there be need to extend such time frames because the claimants are not ready for transfer, that is negotiated and it's taken care of. With on question of on the question of survey, I'm going to surveys and mapping as a challenge, and where are we in terms of the audit issues relating to availability of state land and the difficulties in that regard. I'm going to request Commissioner Jansen to respond to that question. I'm going to request Commissioner Mugono to deal with the questions relating to expropriation and traditional leaders. Chief Director Masango will respond to questions relating to staff retention, vacancy rate, and issues of the budget, the 3.3 versus 2.3, that will be explained. by yourself. The question relating to Ingonyama and traditional leaders and those specific cases in KZN, Commissioner Sosibo, I'm going to request you to deal with. The ability of the Commission to deal with two provinces like Free State and Northern Cape, we have Zell acting in that area. We can have a comment or a response coming from you from that office. However, this we appreciate that it's actually a national question that how are we structured, how are we organized nationally, that you find one commissioner responsible. We will also try to respond to that. On the question of how many expropriation cases chairperson are there or in the pipeline, we can provide statistics immediately after this. We do have a list. Actually, when we dealt with the minister or at least we engaged with the minister on this breakdown of what is outstanding and what are the strategies, we identified those possible expropriation cases. However, you will appreciate that that database or that list is not static because of the dynamics in the negotiation process itself. You find that in some cases, while we had initiated a process, even have drafted a memorandum to the minister now to consider serving an expropriation notice, in the process, we end up, we continue to negotiate, or even the landowners themselves approach us and we end up with some kind of agreement, which then nullifies the need for further processes with regard to expropriations. We have a number of such cases. I hope I have covered all of them, and if not, we will go back to them. Maybe just to respond to the comment made on international experiences as well as comparative studies. Yes, we would compare with you, Honourable Member, on your observation and your take with regards to the extent to which we can learn or we can even impart in this regard. We have since come to the realization that actually South Africa is doing much better than some of these countries that we purport to be learning from. You have your Estonia, you have your Brazil of this world. Canada is one such country that we are also looking at. And just 2 days ago, we received reports from the team which is visiting Canada that in fact they are teaching instead of learning from what Canada is doing. They find us to be more advanced in terms of the progress that we have made. I know Commissioner Mugono wants to add in that response, but it's not blunt and passive learning that we are doing. It's looking at that which we can actually use to improve on what we are doing. But we are quite alive to the fact that in South Africa, our processes are actually more refined and much actually advanced than most of the countries that we have gone ahead to visit. With regard to the post-settlement support strategy that we have made reference to, yes, the strategy has been under development or through a development process for quite some time now. And at this stage, as we are reporting, the development of that strategy is quite advanced. To the extent that we have a draft presented already to the Department on proposed options. There are basically two options now arising from that evidence-based developed strategy. The strategy was actually a result of consultation and actual examination and assessment of real projects and experiences on the ground. And coming from those experiences, from those studies, we do have a draft, and where we are sitting now, the team is now going back after presenting to the senior management of the department, is going back to get feedback to and from the very provinces that provided the information, after which process that that strategy will then follow due approval processes, like having to go to the EXCO, the department, or the Department of Agriculture and Land Affairs, and then go to the social cluster, and after which then it will be submitted to cabinet. Now I'm saying, Chairperson, that there is progress in that regard. We are not talking will be as if nothing is on the table. We do have a draft, and as this strategy is being developed, we are engaging with different stakeholders through various other processes that we had already begun parallel to the development of this strategy. So we are not necessarily folding hands and waiting for the special purpose vehicle with all its challenges, of course, of establishment to be finalized. While that national program is being developed at different levels, nationally and as well as provincially, especially, we are engaging with various stakeholders. We have agreements with your Department of Labor, with the Department of Agriculture. We are engaging using your local land reform and district land reform forum to plan and implement, to solicit support and provide support to these projects at different levels. So it's not a process which actually has put everything else that was on the ground on hold. Those processes are also continuing as we are finalizing on this. At that point, I would then request Commissioner Jansen to deal with state land issues. Thanks.
Chair, I think they must learn from the Zimbabwe option. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Thank you to Commissioner Toomey. I'm going to use the Western Cape as an example of our dependence on state land. Everybody gathered here know that land in the Western Cape is very expensive. So the Commission is dependent on various branches or various departments who have state land in their possession to dispose of that state land for the purposes of the Commission. So we have the Department of Land Affairs themselves, they have an asset register of the state land, but we know that it's a work in progress and that they haven't listed all the state land exactly across the country, but there is an asset register. The Department of Education, the different various municipalities, Department of Transport and Local Government, Department of Housing, the Housing Board, all of these arms of state have state land which they administer on behalf of government. Now we have to go and we have to write to them and say that there is a claim on such a piece of land which is in your possession. We would like you to release that land. We don't really as a rule like to engage in checkbook restitution, so we encourage development. We encourage our claimants to take the land, and therefore we've gone on road shows where we have gone to speak to the political leadership in all the towns, including the mayors. But as you know, that can change at the drop of a hat also. When the political leadership changes, it changes our position. We have to start from scratch to debate with the political leadership in the towns to say why we need the land. The case in point, for instance, is Paul Hockeyfield, where about 3 months, 4 months ago we had an agreement, and that agreement has now slowed down because there's a change of political leadership. In the Western Cape, as in other provinces, we formed what we call a provincial steering committee, which is made up of all the branches, all the departments of government, and it is led by the Department of Housing. I must say that it's not going as well as we thought. We thought it was a question of just signing a document and then people would know that they have to dispose of property to the commission. Can I use the example of Tamboerskloof, where the Department of Public Works has now released, or they are about to release the property, but they have asked us to buy for that property alongside Sandpark, the City of Cape Town, and ourselves. And so all of us have now written to them and say we are interested, and therefore they will divide the property in terms of how that property is going to be zoned, and then we will see whether we will have to pay them for the property. Most municipalities ask us to pay for the services after they've handed over the land to us. We're currently having a few difficulties with some of the municipalities because they don't want to release land to individual claimants. They want to push all the claimants into a housing development, a low-cost housing development. Now, we know many of our claimants, particularly in Cape Town, come from Claremont, Newlands, and such areas, and they don't want to go into low-cost housing development. So that's a problem for us at the moment, besides the fact that land is fairly expensive. And I think most of us in the regions have more or less the similar problems, but in the Western Cape it's much, much more acute. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I can say, Chairperson, that the part that is here referred to is DA and IT that are in charge there. I think the CRI can assist in that process.
Mugona?
Yeah, I'm sure you have noted the area.
Thank you, Commissioner Sabuka. Chairperson, there were a number of questions. I will just try to tackle. There was a question by Honorable Fanikas around what is the greatest challenge in dealing with issues around negotiating prices with landowners and whether is it dealing with claimants. It's actually, it's both. These two are amongst other challenges. Issues of negotiating prices with landowners, it may not really be a biggest challenge because you know what the problem is and the solution might be agreeing on the price. But the issues with claimants, you would find that you've got different communities claiming similar land, and it's compounded by the very story that the issue that was raised by Honorable Nkona around boundary disputes, in the absence of proper descriptions of, you know, land where you have to rely on natural boundaries. So these issues in themselves, they are the challenges that we deal with. But there are issues that we are dealing with. We've got areas where we have resolved them. We've got areas where we have not yet resolved. But we're saying they fall within that basket of the kind of challenges we're dealing with. There was also questions around, which is, I think, a general question that all members are asking around the post-settlement issue, the follow-ups on such claims. But I wanted to answer it this way, Chair, if you allow me, to say, you see, the structuring of the legislation that governs the Commission, in all honesty, the Commission's job ends when the land is given, in terms of the legal mandate. And I think we need to appreciate that legal framework, because it is a legal framework that this very committee also made input into its putting in as members of the legislature. Now, we now are in a situation where the Commission has bought land, given land all over the show, and it becomes incumbent, and it also a responsible institution of government to assist in post-settlement support. But you don't have a legal framework. you don't really have a legal framework that gives you guidance in terms of the Restoration Act. The Restoration Act governs the commission to negotiate claims, finalize, and transfer land. But we have taken upon ourselves the responsibility to assist in developing strategies, and I think that's really the issue which was coming about today. What we could do was to plan and develop the strategy, because the question is, how far has the strategy been? Are you not implementing it? If we are to answer quite directly, we will say, legally we don't have the mandate to implement post settlement. We don't. Not that we don't want it, but we're saying it's not a legal sanctioned mandate. But we're doing it. And the manner we're doing it is that as and when we settle claims, we try to structure it in such a way that other institutions of government, agriculture and relevant institutions, are coerced and brought on board for integration and working together. We play that facilitative role. But I think it would be good, Honorable Chair, if members could really appreciate that angle. And I'm not saying questions should not be asked on post-settlement. I'm not suggesting that. All I'm saying is we need to appreciate that the Land Claims Commission, in terms of its current legal structure, has got no mandate, legal, enforceable power on post-settlement. But it's playing a facilitative role, even in terms of where the court has made order. The Land Claims Commission's role is just to facilitate and monitor, but it's got no implementation. But we're doing that. We've got strategies that the chairperson, the commissioner, acting commissioner has been talking about here. And we're saying, in terms of those strategies, we have identified that there are challenges. We've even done an assessment of in some of the CPAs of communal property institutions where land has been given. There is a report, and I think maybe it would be good if we share those reports with the committee, where we went into each and every province and looked at all the claims that were settled, and looked at the capacity and the structuring of the legal institutions or the communal property institutions, the trusts and the CPAs that are managing this. What are the challenges? How best can they be improved? The question then remains is that who is going to do that? And I think that's the area where the SPV issues are now coming on board. And so we say SPV is in development stage, but as that is happening, the issues on the ground, yes, there are issues, there are challenges, and we are trying on a day-to-day basis. And you will find different responses from different offices or provinces as to how the other institutions of government are coming on board. We might find in Limpopo that the Department of Agriculture has proactively come on board and taking an active role and has even hired staff to take forward some of the claims in other provinces also. But this may not be at the same scale. So some of the challenges that we deal with. There were questions around, well, the question by Honorable Nkuna was on rural claims, but there was also a question by another Honorable Member, is an Honorable PC, on the definition of this rural claim. What are we talking about? Just in simple terms, the rural claims, we are really talking about claims which are in the countryside, claims which are in your rural areas affecting huge commercial farms, or in some areas, green fields which are state land or privately owned properties. But these are really rural areas. And the distinction of it between urban claims is claims where people have individual titles in an urban area or town where they stayed in fans or so. So that's the distinction. So it's when you say the majority of claims that are remaining are rural claims. We're saying the big claims where you got a lot of farms being claimed in the rural areas where there is no tangible maps that have been requested or mentioned, where there are boundary issues, are the ones that are staying. And these are the problematic ones. And I think that's what we were trying to bring out in this report in terms of how we are dealing with them. There were also issues around the grants released in phases. We should explain what we mean by that. I think, in short, what we are saying is that the grant funding that we avail to assist communities have been given land. What you could do, because you need to first put up a structure and the proper financial management structure to run and implement. You can't just take 10 million and just pump it into the CPA account. You would want to structure it within a particular business release strategy where when a business plan is presented on what are the activities that can be done, then it would release those grants in accordance to what would be the dictates of the business initiatives that they would take. And I think that the strategy to really build up momentum on appreciating and understanding that if you have public funds that are availed, you also need to put monitoring mechanisms to make sure that you do not have a situation where people just take the money for themselves. The also questions on traditional leaders, as to what is really the challenge. I know Commissioner Sosibo will talk more on the issue of King's Elite and the like, but in general, the issue around traditional leaders, yes, we want traditional authorities to work with us. In some areas, it's not like that. In some areas, we've got a situation where the people who have lodged a claim, they were not necessarily the subject of a particular tribal authority, but they were made subjects after they were removed from one area to another. And at the time of lodging their claim, the particular authority or traditional authority may say, no, this claim should be in my name, or this claim should be for my community or our traditional authority. Whereas there's a distinct and a specific group of families or households who were victims of dispossession, not that particular tribal authority. You have those kind of issues that are at play. But at the same time, you have land claims that are on land, which is communal land, which is actually land under the tribal jurisdiction of particular tribal traditional leader. And you have conflict there because some of the traditional leaders are of the view that people should lodge claims on their own land. And the responsibility of the commission is to investigate those claims so that we are able to get resolution. But if you do that, then you'll have this conflict issues that come forward, and we have to deal with them. These are issues that we are saying you cannot necessarily approach them from a technically legal argument. You need to be quite aware of the political implications that can come out, or social disruptive implications that can come up, depending on what decisions get to be taken. So those are some of the things that I don't know. There are a lot of other questions. The question on the appointment of the mediation service. Just to say, the Honourable Dali is not here, but we asked the question whether this agency has been appointed. I would just say yes. The agency is in place, has been appointed. All that needs to happen is that each of the provinces which can tap into these people to assist us with the resolution of conflict amongst communities in an attempt to speed up resolution of claims. I hope that the Chief Acting Commissioner will respond to the issue of the 2008 deadline. But except for that, I think that's really the situation and the response that we can give for now.
Commissioner Sosibo? Thank you, Acting Commissioner. Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, just let me welcome the opportunity to present to you. I want to first start by the Mangethe issue. I must say that Mangethe has been settled. We're in the process of implementing the award. Also, it's important to note that Mangethe is not an issue that is going to go away, Chair. Very soon, there are still some issues, remnants of some challenges around there, even during the implementation. However, things seem to be more managed or contained at this stage, so hopefully it will continue in this manner. With regards to the issue of traditional leaders and Ngonyama Trust, there are a number of challenges around this, especially that relate to the restitution process. In KwaZulu-Natal, we have a very peculiar situation where we have what we call landless amakhosi. These are amakhosi that don't have land jurisdiction, which they see the opportunity in the restitution process where they can actually acquire land for themselves and their subjects. And this creates a problem because the claimants at times they feel that these amakhosi are imposing themselves on them, and that's where there are tensions which really make it very difficult to implement the restitution process, where the so-called inkosi is
mustn't say so-called inkosi because there are amakosi there, for the illiterate amakosi, but they don't have land per se. They will demand that the land that is being illiterate must be given to them for their subjects. There are some of the challenges that was in this. But also we've got... Hello? I wasn't sure what it is.
I think the mic which is on someone.
Can I proceed? Oh, thank you. We also have got a situation where the overlapping claims between different amakosi, also they take time to resolve because everybody will be feeling that before a certain period, my great-grandfather actually had jurisdiction over this land. So there are some of the issues that relate to the traditional leaders. And on specifically on the issue of Wanyama Trust, certainly let me take the opportunity to welcome the visit to the province to assist with this. Although there are a number of processes that are in place to try and address this issue of the role of the king, the detainee in the process, and also in relation to the restitution claim. But we had meetings with the Ngonyama Trust, the acting chair, which is Judge Ngwenya, and we still have not reached an agreement with regard to the Ngonyama Trust land. Because there's a perception that that land belongs to the community, so should not be taken away from them. Although Ngonyama Trust is a state land, and we're treating it as such, but there are tensions and different views between us and the Ngonyama Trust. But I think it's an issue that probably in that engagement and probably in future engagement and some of the processes that you're putting in place will be able to resolve as soon as possible. As a result, all the claims that are under Ngonyama Trust, we have not been able to settle, not even one, and because of the different views that we're having there. On the role of the king, the perception there is that the area, some of the area around Usutu, is seen by the king and his council as land that belongs to the king, and including the Nongoma town, and there are claims that have been successfully lodged by claimants there in terms of the history. And fortunately, we have got a very well documented history and removals of how people were moved from that area, and it actually meets the requirement. Actually, they are legitimate claimants. But the challenge now is that the king is saying that the land must be registered under his name, not on the people that have lodged claims. So that's where we're having problems. And the minister and the chief land claims commissioner are also attempting to assist in resolving the situation. But probably with the visit and the intervention at this level as well, if it would assist, we would really appreciate it. Yes, let me stop there. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Commissioner. Can you have Chief Director Mahlangu responding to those areas, budget, staff retention, vacancy rate, and related questions?
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Acting CLCC. Thanks, members and commissioners. Mine will be more specifically on the support services that we provide to the commissioners, especially in the region, as national office from the Chief Land Claims Commissioner. When coming to issues of capacity, maybe I should just clarify something that because the annual report is for a particular financial year, I'll refer you to page 52 of the annual report. This is slide 60, that has a percentage of, slide 19, that has a percentage of 42%. I think there, if you look at page 52, it's clear that if you look at the previous 8-1 focus, the vacancy rate was 28%. But this slide is showing additional 21 new posts. That is why the vacancy rate has increased to 42, because those 42% it necessarily means that most of the positions since they are new, they're still at the advertisement stage, interviews, and they're still there to the appointment. So the figure will change as soon as possible. But having said that, I think that it's true that the vacancy rate is really affecting or hampering the settlement of claim in the fact that Restitution is a very specialized job, and there are hard conditions that people find themselves in. So a person, like for instance, if you are a deputy director at the restitution, you compare in other departments, you find it easy for you to leave the job and go to another lighter job, but where you are going to be paid is a similar remuneration compared to restitution. That is why you find that our vacancy rate in terms of percentage is always high. You appoint a person today, the following month, the person cannot stand the pressure, and then they leave to other organizations. There was also an issue of saying that are we maybe looking at the possibility of hiring interns in order to assist us to push the claims? Yes, DLA, if you have been looking at the newspapers recently, you've noticed that they've made an advert where they are requesting about 500 interns. Most of them, they are going to be project learners. And So those learners are going to be trained for 2 years, linked to certain universities, and then be placed back to the region in order to assist the regions for the settlement of claims. There was also an issue about the budget to say that the 2.3 billion 100% planning is not the true reflection because 1 billion was referred back. If you have been following the restitution in the past financial year, you will know that around October, the Chief and Claims Commissioner requested through the Minister the delegation because there was this red tape of saying that most of the claims, once they are approved at the Commissioner level, they still have to refer to DLA, to the Chief Financial Officer and the DG. In October, we got the delegation. From there, what we did, I technically became the Chief Financial Officer of the restitution, and then we appointed the Director Quality Assurance in order to address the issues of the risk and the controls and to speed up the process of approval. Whilst we were doing that, however, the controls were not in place, so we had to take a conscious decision to say that let's release the money back to Treasury so that Treasury can allocate to money to where there are urgent projects like your health department and other stuff. And then once we are setting up our processes, that's why we took the money back. But for the 2.3 billion that was left in the budget, we made sure that quickly the systems are up and running and we managed to spend it 100%. Actually, we spent 104%. We had to request the shifting environment from other problems to assist us with our overspending. I must also assure the members that as we are sitting now, we are already negotiating with Treasury to go back and ask that 1 billion back because our processes are very fast. They are moving very fast now. We are sitting now at the 50%, which is about 1.6 billion that we've spent up to date. So we're going to exhaust our budget before the end of the financial year. So Treasury is really looking at the possibility of bringing that billion back so that it can be spent before March 2008. So there's good progress in terms of spending. There was also an issue around what are the outstanding claims as in today, because this is an annual period that is, say, 5,279. The settled claims as April, June is 122, which necessarily means that as we are sitting now, we have about 5,157. So there's really good progress looking at the fact that we are left with those difficult claims that are big and that they are rulers in terms of the financial competition that was happening before. I think I've covered that. Well, there was also a question around the grants, why they are issued in phases. I'm told that's when it's covered, so I'll stop here. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to follow up. When he said today, they have taken few people to train for 2 years. Have they actually explained before that the people are unemployed today and run away from the pressure looking for better, greener pressure? So have they made any arrangement with those people who will be trained for 2 years that when they come back, they've got to come back into the pressure and for a certain contract. What plans have they made so that they can actually tie them up? Because you can't train somebody. When he comes, he dumps you. What plans have you got?
Chair, just clarity on the claims that have been settled up to now. What was the figure mentioned?
The figure is 122.
Which one? From the outstanding one?
Yes.
Okay.
Between April to June, the first quarter of the current financial year.
outside the annual report. Yes.
On the issue of the instance, yes, member, there's a contract that they are going to sign that's spelled out in the details of the job and what are their responsibilities and how long they will be with the department. If they leave, what are the consequences? So it's tight enough.
Chair, perhaps also to indicate that another improvement in this staff retention, staff turnover challenge was the decision by the minister and the department to start a process of converting these contract positions into permanent positions, such that the permanent positions would then be absorbed firstly within the bigger establishment of the Department of Land Affairs. The department itself has gone through a whole structural re-engineering, and that process took into account the need that might or the vacancies that might actually be used to accommodate the staff complement as it is now in the commission. Not only that, the positions that the posts that we advertised, you will realize that we had a problem attracting a good quality personnel through our contract adverts, and people who would come with an intention to stay in the commission. But we have since, the minister has since given a directive that even those posts that we will be advertising are advertised as posts, permanent posts of the DLA, and once people are appointed, they are then seconded to the commission, such that comes the time when they have to revert back to the main stream structure of the department or establishment of the DLA, that will happen with ease. The question on market forces, Chairperson, I think this is a broader question, a much bigger question than than the work of the commission. And I'm sure members are aware of the process or review policy review processes which the Department of Land Affairs in general is engaged in reviewing the role of government in guiding, in monitoring, and influencing market prices as it relates to land prices, land acquisition. Various policies are now emerging, are now being developed to deal specifically with the impact of market forces on land prices as it relates to land acquisition for land reform purposes. Now, what we are saying basically is that for now, while those processes are underway, the only tool that we have is the market, is to conduct valuations that are based on market, and on the basis of those prices, market prices, we negotiate. Yes, we do, in some instances, succeed in negotiating for prices that are below market, but the standard is market related prices. The question around the question on the target date, the deadline. Chairperson, on this one, as I've indicated, we have engaged in a rigorous process of review, of assessing the status quo as it is now. And having done that, we have come to terms with the reality that some of these difficult cases that we have identified might not be settled by March 2008. And those are the cases that we are working very hard, really, to come up with all these strategies to say how are we going to be dealing with them. And we are also looking at engaging with the Department of Land Affairs on how together now as a department
what will be residual, what will be remaining come that time, is going to be done to deal with. What is it? What is proper? How you know would be proper? Would be the proper way to handle those claims, given the legislative framework that is there for settlement of claims, but did also in view of the organizational capacity and structure of the department as it is in addressing restitution cases pre and post settlement. So we of these 5,000, we will endeavor to deal with most of them. Most of them will be settled, as we are saying, that we are doing everything. We are even outsourcing, and we are batching. We are using all these different strategies to do our best. And we are saying at that time another review will be conducted. But to this date, we are looking at not less than 2% of this 5,000 claims that would be remaining in March 2008. 2 to 5% of the claims, we are saying, are most likely to be outstanding by the time we reach that cut-off date. Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner, for the 3 outstanding questions that has been asked by Honorable Jali, the Matatiel claim and then on Solax Neck in Eastern Cape, the Matalascom in White River, and also the one of commissioners who are acting in 2 provinces. In, maybe that one I can respond, but you can respond to the chair.
Chairperson, can we ask a question as to how they arrived at 30,000 rand to each family in the settlement in Bondoland? That question was asked, and I did hear it being responded to.
Chairperson, as I have already requested for your indulgence, the Mpumalanga as well as the Eastern Cape specific project questions, can we request to come back to you about the specifics on those projects if you accept, because we don't have with us, although we have acting commissioners, but I'm not sure if they would be in the position to give us those details to the satisfaction of the members on the question. But if you allow, we would provide you with written responses on those specific questions. On the question of the capacity issue at commissioner level, it is a fair and genuine observation to say if you do, at the vacancy rate, and if you even have problems at that leadership and strategic level, how do you hope to manage a process that will enable you to finalize? I must indicate at this point that a recruitment process has actually been undertaken for Northern Cape and Free State. The commissioners there have been, interviews have been held and we are hoping to get announcements on or appointments actually made soon. The commission has also conducted interviews for the appointment of a deputy CLCC, deputy chief land lands commissioner, who also will bring in value in the strategic management and leadership of the commission across the province and provide support, of course, in those provinces where such support and direction and leadership is required. Unfortunately, with regard to like provinces like Gauteng in Northwest and Free State, and we will still remain in terms of the demarcations and allocations that we made, having one commissioner. But looking at the workload and the number of cases, you know, the area and the extent of work, a commissioner would then be advised and guided by those requirements and specific to look at the load, the number in terms of capacity of warm bodies required for a structure in a particular setting. The staff complement in Mpumalanga might not necessarily be the same as the staff complement in Gauteng and Northwest because of the dynamics that are involved. And that might not necessarily be the same as the staff complement in Free State and Northern Cape combined. So whilst you will be having one commissioner, but the foot soldiers, the actual implementers, runners on the ground, would actually have to be allocated and decided in terms of the extent of the work on the ground. So that is being addressed for those commissioners, for commission posts that have been vacant. I'm saying in the past week or so, we have seen recruitment processes advancing to a point where interviews were held. Thanks.
Thanks, Commissioner. On that one, recommendations were made to Cabinet. I'm still waiting for a response from Cabinet. I think that brings us to the end of the meeting, but the two outstanding questions that you said you're going to submit in writing, I mentioned them deliberately, sensitizing you with the necessity and the importance of maybe all of the team that must be here before the committee. Not necessarily that maybe you do the committee the favor to come here. Everybody's obliged by the Constitution to come and account before the committee. Thanks.
And could I just ask before we adjourn, I've written a letter to you requesting an explanation by the Minister regarding the land bank, and I still have not received a date for when this will happen.
You wrote a letter to me? I haven't received that letter. I think you are all invited to second floor, new wing for lunch. Or you still want to come in?
Yes, Madam Chair. I just wanted to respond to the issue of the standard settlement offer or how people get paid an amount of 30-odd thousand that the honourable member asked. We've got a policy called the standard settlement offer, which we make to all claimants. If they are going to take a financial compensation. And it is based on the housing subsidy and for tenancy. So that's why we have 30-odd thousand rand. I think it's gone up to 38,000 rand now.
Just a person, I hear what she's saying, but I don't think we are on the same wavelength in that. She is saying when the applicants or claimants have opted for cash. In this case, if I understood what I was reading here, these people didn't opt for cash. They were given land, which was about 2,800 hectares in Mapua or the other Machon, I don't know where. But they were physically given land. And this thing says, more and above the land, they were given 30,000. And I said, are they aware that some of the people in this area were compensated when they were removed?
Okay. Chairperson, I think I want to maintain our response earlier that we will provide the details of this specific claim. However, in general, there are those cases where people receive both land and financial compensation, and it is guided by different circumstances. In some instances, you look at land restored, you look at restitution on conservation land,
a number of considerations actually do take place there, because in some instances, for instance, it is conservation. People get ownership in title but do not reside on the land. There's still something that they have been deprived of in terms of access and use of that land. In other cases, if they are getting alternative land, find that the value of the alternative land is not equal to the value of the land, and the difference in value must actually be compensated for in terms of financial compensation. So I'm simply saying here that the circumstances are different, and the principle basically is for people to get just and equitable compensation, fair compensation when restoration or an award is made, and that is what is underlying all the different scenarios. Thank you.
Thanks for coming before the committee, and also thanks to the members of the media who are here. Honourable members, thank you for the time. That brings us to the end of the meeting. Maybe hoping to see you next week. Thank you. I said, no, not you, members. I'm sorry about that.